We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by not Paddy, not Pete, but I'm joined by Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
I've got a very, very, this is only going to be audio, it's podcast only, but me and Steve, the purposes of this podcast are on video, so we can see the new websites. Steve, I'm very excited. It's taken me about two, first of all, before we get into that, by the way, thinking of joining, go to sharepickers.com/subscribe. I'm about to relaunch the website after like 8 or 9 months of not taking any subscribers. And I'm very excited because a lot has happened. But where have you been, Steve? Because you went abroad with lots of boxes, lots of cases, and you were doing it last year, this time, you're doing a sort of, what was it, social media, social reality sort of filming thing in Malta, weren't you?
Yeah, reality TV show Malta, which was live streamed, and they also were making a, I think it's an eight-part series, which is about to be released soon. So, but to launch it, they are doing a little behind-the-scenes documentary. So they got in touch with me and asked me if I wanted to go out and be a behind-the-scenes interviewee to talk about the show and how it was put together. So, yeah, so we did that last week.
Oh, okay.
Was it last week or the week before?
Yeah, so they're doing that show again, are they?
No, not doing it again. They're launching, because it was all live. So imagine like Big Brother. It's a live stream. It's live when it went out as in its full entirety. And then they're doing an edited thing. So when like Big Brother, where they put the edited show out each night, this is being put out as a series. And I mean, they're trying to sell it to like streaming services, basically. So,
I got you. I'll tell you what, Steve. What you said the other day, was, you came round in the house a few months back with your other half.
Good memory.
And you had his and her shoes on, right?
Yes.
And my shoes now, I literally walk the dog. I'm trying to get 10,000 steps a day. I'm getting there. Last few days I've been getting there because I'm going to abroad on holidays in a month's time. And I've got to shed some weight. But so I thought, my feet are really hurting in my old trainers. And I've just got two pairs of old Adidas trainers, right? And you've got these orthopedic shoes, haven't you?
Yeah, you say orthopedic. I don't know the orthopedic at all. they're Roger Federer trainers.
Oh, okay. And what are they called?
On Running.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I've asked Megan to buy me. Well, I'm not. So I said, I'm going to get some of these. My feet are really hurting. But you said, if you've got a wide foot, what a wide foot? Have you seen wide foot?
There's a reason I say this, because I recommended this to quite a few friends. And then every friend I recommended, like, oh, they were too skinny, so I had to go for the wide one. So it seems the wide foot is quite a common thing in this world as well, certainly with my friends. So I just presumed you'd just be one of those wide footed people.
But it's funny how that phrase, wide foot, if you've got a wide foot. I said, which one, my left or my right? Have you seen my wide foot? It's like I've got one club foot or something. But obviously you mean wide foot is in plural, but what came to mind was I've got a really deformed left foot or something, or right foot, you know? But yeah, no, so I'm looking into that, and hopefully Megan's going to get me some ons for... But I think you're right, though. I think as you get older, I said to Megan, walk with the dog of the day, as you get older, you generally get more unattractive by evolution. And so I've gone from literally having, you know, a full head of curly hair when I was younger, really curly.
You really
hair.
Did.
Yeah, to bald. Hair now has grown up my nose, out of my ears. My feet are getting wider. It's like, it's just like literally, it's almost like, I don't know who our creator is, but they're saying, how can I make older people less attractive? I know. grow hair in places they don't need it. Make their feet really wide like a hobbit. Like, why is my feet going wider? Because these trainers I wore, I've had these trainers about 2 years. They were comfortable 2 years ago. And now they're really hurting either sides of my feet. So I think you're right. My feet are good. I've got a wide foot, Steve. I think I've got wide foot syndrome.
See? Predicted it. See, but that's the thing. I used to buy cheap, like 34. I know the cost of trainers is
buy cheap,
up in
buy
general.
Twice.
Well, no, because they used to do me 30, 40 quid for a pair of Adidas or whatever was in sale. Whereas now I'm spending like 100 to 150 pounds a pair of trainers. And I'm actually, when you're on your feet all day, you go, yeah, do you know what? I can really tell the difference between those ones and the cheap ones now. The ones are very comfortable. The one thing I'd say, though, if you are going to be walking the dog in muddy things, because their design is kind of like got little bubbles on the bottom, which is why they're so comfortable to wear. But they do get stones and things stuck in them. That's the only annoying thing about them, I'd say.
They need to sort that out. No, but you're right. Do you know what? It's almost like never buy cheap shoes, you know, especially as you get older. Because you literally spend your time on if you walk a bit, you know, that's where you connect with the ground. It's the connection space. That's very important there. And in fact, my father used to say, car sales, spend a lot of time on his feet. And he said, never go cheap on shoes. Always get a good pair of shoes, good quality shoes. Because
he's on about actual shoes, though, isn't he? Not trainers.
Yeah, not trainers. But I mean, it basically from there up, it sets your posture, everything. You can mess up your whole body if you got cheap shoes and you're not feeling comfortable down below where you stand on the floor. Nothing else is going to be right. You know, it's like building a portfolio essentially. Oh, here we are coming into stocks and shares. You know, you've got to get the basis right. And So anyway, but on that website, Ons, the cheapest shoe there. It's 140 quid for a pair, isn't it? Pretty much.
About that, yeah.
Is that expensive, or is it?
That's about right nowadays. I think you're not going to get a pair of trainers now for less than 100 quid. So you know they're a bit more. I don't know what's the word, premium. Yeah, so you probably pay about 150 quid. Like another brand as well. It's quite really comfy to wear, which I use for my work ones. Are Hokas. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're like walking on air bubbles. Like they're brilliant. Yeah,
Hokas. Send me the link for those. Because do you know, fair play, Steve, you do go for quality. You know, you don't worry about it. And that's right, actually. It is buy cheap, buy twice. Do you find that? You find that a lot, you know. It happens. Just go for proper quality stuff, and they'll last you twice as long. It's like, I know someone said recently, they bought a Miele dishwasher and oven and all that stuff. And I said, the trouble is, if you buy, it's more expensive, but a Miele dishwasher is probably about 50% more expensive than than what you can get.
And the rest.
But the thing is, they're a guarantee for at least 10 years. So if you get a cheap dishwasher, it probably lasts about 2 years. So essentially, you are going to buy five times of those, or 3 years. So you buy three of those compared to a Miele. You might as well.
I bought a Whirlpool washing machine, which cost me less than £200 when I moved into my house 21 years ago, and I've still got the same one.
Oh, there we are. Thanks for bucking the trend this year. I'll
try to
make a point there. But
I do only watch once a year, though.
Yeah, exactly. There's always an exception to the rule. Anyway, listen, Steve. So the reason why you're on is this, right? Because you said a while back, and you're right now, do we start thinking about making some individual investments because the market is turning a little bit, okay? I've literally not taken on any new members to my website for 8 months. And because I've literally gone through a period of, you know, go through a cracking bull market where I made a decent chunk of money and then losing pretty much 45% of that to the bear market. And I thought that shouldn't be the case. You know, that shouldn't be. And so I'm obsessed with stocks and shares. I'm also obsessed with systems, trying to find systems. So I literally spent ages and ages, almost 2 years, working on spreadsheets and doing the webinar and that stuff. And I've come up with a system which I sounds odd, but it's not really. It's almost bulletproof if you can stick to it. So what I want to do is I want to literally help you, you know, adopt this bulletproof system, and it works. Absolutely works. In fact, you can see, most people can't now, but you can see my website here. It's a brand new refresh. So you've got, you know, a learning tab on the left, getting started. It's all about videos there. It's fundamental analysis, which is looking at, you know, balance sheets, cash flow statements, and income statements, technical analysis, a little bit of charts, portfolio management. That is the most important thing of all. And basically, these three here come under my titles in my book called What, When, How. So what is the fundamental, you know, what to buy. Technical analysis is when to buy. And portfolios, how to buy it. And if you actually stick to the rules, and it's very hard because I don't sometimes because I think I know better, then there's no way you can lose money, pretty much, because it's a three-level security system. And I talk about portfolio management saying it's essentially investing in stocks and shares is risk management. That's all it is. It's not about reward. Now, and I talk about this in the book, and in fact, the book now, as you can see there, if you look at this, I will be launching on Amazon, but right now, the book, which is for members, you can read it. In fact, you can pump that up if you want to full screen. Look at that. Look at that, Steve. So you can see that. How to Become a Microcap Millionaire by Justin Waite, three-step strategy. Because that's what I did. That's what I did over the last 11, 12 years. I still am. But it essentially goes through all of this, and you can have that book if you remember. But what I want to do, Steve, is prove to you, for example, that this works, all right?
Like, yeah, because obviously I've been in the investment train. Is it a train we call it? I don't know.
Yeah.
And I've obviously not done particularly well, and I've lost quite a lot of money, as I'm sure most people have. I know Pete's in a similar situation. And I'm quite nervous getting back into it because my stocks and shares investments are pretty much my pension. So when you see that much disappear from it, and you kind of go, reality kicks in, and you kind of go, okay, I need to be sensible here. You know, I'm not a gambler. And let's be honest, over the last couple of years, I've probably been gambling a little bit more than I should have been on the small caps. So, yeah, so I've kind of...
Yeah, well, do you know what, Steve? Do you know what, Steve, right? Why the strategy worked in the bull market is because it was a reward strategy. That's all it was. It wasn't a risk reward strategy. And I underlined this book and I thought, okay, there's no way I want to ever lose money like I did that again in the bear market, ever.
Nor me.
I know. So this is basically with that in mind. I say quite a few times that I've learned more in the last 2 years than I've ever learned since I've been investing. And I started to invest in 1999. This is a long bear market. It's one of the longest we are. In fact, I've gone through four bear markets, and this is the longest of all of them. Great financial crash, dot-com bubble, the COVID dash for cash crash, and the great financial crisis. And this is longer than all of them. But this has taught me so much. And so anyway, so my website is set up to help sort of investors navigate this. Also have, you know, a really sort of fundamental, you know, risk management strategy in place. So that's what I'm going to do, right? So you can see this. Don't talk about any of the stocks in here, Steve, because only members can see this, right? So what I've created is a microcap league. And I've created this because, like I said, part of the study and part of the book and part of the research was that I found the best performing stocks had five traits in common. You know, I looked at that 10 baggers. Plus, I looked at other stocks, but I highlighted these because they're the best performers. But they all have certain traits. And so I've got together and filtered all these traits. And essentially, it comes out of growth, value, momentum, and then health, efficiency, potential. I score 100 microcap stocks. This is sub-100 million with revenue. And the companies that come from the sector are the best performers of the last 5 to 10 years. I'm not talking about pop and drop stocks.
So what's that score mean?
So essentially, so as you can see right here now, don't mention any companies, right?
I won't.
You can see there, they're all color-coded on the site as well. So if I click into sort of one of the companies here.
Justin's Underwear Limited.
Again? Yeah, Justin's Underwear Limited. If I click in that there, right, you can see the company information, everything about the company, from the broker target price, that's the brokers. You can see the upside potential, okay, enterprise value. You see all about it. You can see, now, the most important thing for a growth company is growth. So I score on all these metrics, growth, value, health, everything.
Wow, there's some good detail in that. Nice colours as well.
There's a lot there, from forecasts to everything. This is all taken from financial data, by the way. And, of course, there's 100 companies, and they are scored according to these metrics, growth, value, momentum. And so what you're seeing here, Steve, is essentially the stocks at the top of this list are the best risk-reward profile stocks around. That means they've got growth, they've got good value, they've got very good potential, plus they're also very healthy. I mean, they've got good balance sheets, they've got momentum, everything. So you can see that's a microcap league. It's the only one in the UK. This is where big winners come from. Now, if you
so
can watch...
Is any of this to do with your algorithms, or this is just the data you've pulled in?
This is basically... All that is based... So growth, value, health, efficiency is all based on financial reports. So it's all fact. You know, it's not nothing I manipulate. It's all fact. You know, okay. These companies release financial reports every year, interims every 6 months. So this is
how often does this update then?
Well, this is a good thing, Stephen. So, for example, look at value there, right? Now, if the share price shoots up, okay, the potential goes down. Because let's say, for example, you've got a stock, say, that's 50 pence, and the potential there, the broker's giving it, say, a pound target. If it shoots up, so you've got literally, 100% upside there, that would score big on the potential. And the value at the moment is quite good, according to the financial data. Now, if it shoots up by, to 80 pence, then the potential goes down, but also because the valuation goes up, it becomes less of a good value stock. So it drops down the list. So it literally drops on the list. So literally everything at the top of this list, they've got good value and there's still good potential, but they also have growth. Now, if you scroll down, you may see companies there with growth, but not good value because they're overvalued, for example, and their potential is that good. So it's dynamic. It changes every evening. And like I say, if one of these companies in the top 10, for example, shoot up in price, then their valuation becomes less compelling because the market cap has gone up, and then obviously they're closer towards their potential. So it moves every evening. So anyway, on that, that's a micro company. So if you look at watch lists, I've got my watch list and my holdings. So if I remember, you see exactly what I'm holding, right? Those are my holdings right there. And then you can see exactly what I'm going to be looking at to invest in if conditions, I write a blog as well. If you click on this, soon you'll be clicking the watch list and I'll explain why I'm watching these companies. So you click that. But what I want you to do, Steve, right? I want you to put in place the what, when, how of my book, because my book is free there. You can click that. So I wanted you to look at my watch list, right? And I'd say, like in, Countdown, or couple from the top, couple from the bottom. But I want you, first of all, we talk about portfolio management. It's risk management, first of all. So that's the basis. That's like the foundation of building a house. If you don't have portfolio management and risk management, you're knackered. It's like building a house with no roof on it. Everything inside will get wrecked. Doesn't matter. So first and foremost, I say that for any private investor, the backbone to any portfolio should be a fund. Now, I believe you do have a fund already.
Correct.
Yeah, a well-diversified, low-cost fund. What fund are you in?
Vanguard 100% equity.
Cool. Now, my rule of thumb is this. I think you should have around about your age, percentage-wise, taking up your portfolio. Your age should be what it should be. You know what I mean? And if you're not up to that, say you're 50 and you have a fund that's taking up 10%, then try and get up to 50 in the next 3 to 5 years. And you do that by a monthly, direct debit, and you buy on a monthly basis. That means you dollar cost average, you buy the lows, you buy the highs, all that stuff. So you buy more shares when it's low. And that's one thing you can do is average down on a fund. It's fine.
Does that mean I'm about 80 years old in the
Is that
world?
What you got, 80%, is it? Yeah, so literally, that fund is probably going to turn you between, 5 and 10%, which is fine. Now, and see that as the basis. Now, you want to earn more money than that from individual stocks, and then that will be the fund feeder. It'll feed that into the fund, But as you get older and approach retirement, you'll be more exposed to that fund. It's a more safe return because in that fund there, you've got about 7,000 companies. 20% is US big stocks, 20% is UK big stocks, 20% is European big stocks, 15%. So literally, you are almost diversified around the world. So you can't get more diversified than that. It's a very safe fund, but you're never going to blow the lights out with that. So, Steve, what you need to do is pick, I'd say, three from the top, okay, of my holdings here. And they are the top scorers in the Muckrat League. And maybe two others from below somewhere, okay? But this is the thing. Whenever you make an investment, you can do all the research you want. You never know if it's going to go in the right direction. So, and this is what I say, focus on the risk first. Don't think how much you're going to make on this. That's where investors go wrong. They tend to think, how much am I going to make on this? They focus on the reward only. And then they think, okay, if I put $1,000 in and it's going to double, I make $2,000. What about if I took $10,000 in? I put $10,000 in. And they go too big, too quickly on very risky individual investments. And most private investors lose money on individual investments. Understand that. So manage the risk first. That's what you need to do. So, Steve, you must think now, not how much am I going to make, how much am I going to lose? Yeah. So that's what you have to think. Now, when you have that in mind, you'll come up with a figure that you're comfortable with losing. And I would suggest that's between 1% and 3% of your total portfolio value. You know, that's how much you're comfortable. Don't think how much you're going to win. Think, this could go wrong. So in your head, just think, if this goes wrong, what's the maximum I lose on this company? So that's what we have to think. Let's pick a company and think, how much am I comfortable losing on this? Because if they're a good, I mean, microcaps, by the way, can do multi bags. So that you know when it's starting to go right, straight away, okay? And then within maybe a week, maybe a month. But if it starts to go right, you can start averaging up and then leverage towards your winners, not your losers. So you don't average down, you average up. Because that means you pull, because people, you know, people buy a stock, it'll go down, they'll buy more. They go down, buy more. What you're doing there is leveraging your portfolio towards your loser. So your biggest, basically, your portfolio value is leveraged to a biggest loser. You shouldn't do that. You should leverage towards your biggest winner. So, you know, if it starts rising, then you can put some more in. But the first 20% is the most important. Once you get above 20%, you put a stop loss in. But straight away, so you pick five stocks from there, three from the top, I'd say, top three I've got on my list there, because they are the best risk reward profile. Then go for a couple of others, two others, and only put as much as you want to lose on each of those. But then, as soon as you invest in them, put a stop loss 20% below. That will limit your loss, and that will limit how much you're ever going to lose in that stock. And so let's say, for example, I use round figures. Let's say your portfolio is 100 grand. It's probably not, but it's easy for round figures. So let's say you're going to put 1% in a company. You got, you know, £1,000. And you can put 20% stop loss on that. You're only going to lose £200 on that. You know, so that's the maximum. And that's about risk management. You know exactly how much you're going to lose. Now, focus on the loss first. When you start going into reward, then you can start focusing on reward management, not risk management, because it is about risk. You're risking capital to make reward. So start doing that. So first of all, so pick five stocks on each. Think, how much am I? It doesn't matter how small you go. Because when they start working, these can multi-bag. There's plenty of time to average up. But the trick is keeping your losses small. And that's where most private investors go wrong. They go too big, too quickly, and they don't put a stop loss in. And then the losses get bigger and bigger and bigger. And they haven't the heart to cut it because it's too big. It's too emotional for them. So that's all you need to do, Steve. Okay, you got a fund, that's fine. You're probably a little bit too overexposed. Not overexposed, but a little too much weighted towards that to get bigger returns. So pick five stocks from there. I'd say three from the top, two from anywhere else. Go small, put a stop loss in 20% below where you buy. Okay, and you can sit back. You don't have to look at the stock price every day. Because, okay, if it goes wrong, it goes wrong. Doesn't matter. I've lost 20% of 1%. That's nothing, is it? 20% of 1% is nothing. But when you start moving, then you can start averaging up and you can start covering off your risk, your loss there. And so that's the way forward. And by the way, these stocks are all measured on momentum as well. So not only is the growth and value good and health and efficiency, but on a chart, they're not in a downtrend. So be careful of companies on the momentum column if they're on zero, because they're obviously maybe in a downtrend. That's one thing I would say. But that's one thing I would say. So pay attention. But the three most important, well, growth is the most important, value second, momentum's third, but together they're very important.
Sorry, in this, I presume the amber means medium and the red means low and the green means high. Yes.
Yeah. So, but as long as you've got, to a certain extent, as long as you've got growth and value, okay, if you haven't got momentum, as long as they've got growth and value, it's not too bad because they're growing and they're good value. But, you know, like I say, if you start small, it's fine. And like I say, if it goes down 20%, 20% of 1% is literally, you're going to, you know, if you've got a 100 grand portfolio, you lose 200 quid. That's what I'd say. It's not going to hit you, you know? So that's where it starts small and manage your risk.
But anyway. So why are you saying do the top three and pick another two? What, surely it makes sense just to do the top three.
If you want, yeah. But in fact, if you go to my website, I talk about performers and recoveries. So the difference is performers are doing well already. They may have been a previous recovery and they may have been a better time to get into them. But if you're going to go for a recovery stock that you think is fundamentally good and going to recover, then the upside could be quick because they've oversold for a long time and they may be going into recovery mode. They are more risky though. They may not recover. They may take longer to recover. So your capital may be tied up for longer. With performers, you probably get a consistent return, but a recovery you can get if they release some training updates that shows they're recovering. They can do a quick sort of breakneck rise, and so you can get a quick gain. But again, it's more risky because turnarounds and recoveries take a little longer. So a couple on the bottom here. A lot of my stocks on the bottom, for example, are recoveries. But I've done research on them. I think they will recover, but it's very risky. But I don't go big, first of all. If they start recovering, then I'll put more into it. But so the safer ones, up here, okay, it's, you know, risk-reward. It's all about risk and reward. So safe risk, you know, safe reward pretty much. But you may get a more reward down here, but it's a bit more risk. So that's
so when you get to your rewards then, say I put that £1,000 in one stock, it starts going up in the nice way, good. At what point do you raise that stop loss?
I'd say when you're up over 20% in the company, but the stop loss up to break even. And then what you have there is...
So you reckon, so about 20% is your stop loss gap really, when you go into positive,
Yeah, and you can never lose money on that, Steve. It's like, that's the gold of investment. You can't beat that. I give an example in the book where I say, you imagine a mate of yours says to you, oh, do me a favor, I'm starting a new business. I've got this excellent idea for, he said, most, you know, dog groomers don't have a good social media presence. So I'm going to do it for them for 100 quid a month. I've contacted like 100 companies or 500 companies, and they're all up for it. He said, it works because people love dog pictures. So there's a before and after picture of the dog. People love them. Lots of engagement. I charge them 100 quid. I need 50 grand to set up. I got 40 grand. Give me 10 grand. And you can be a 20% shareholder or whatever. I said, okay. Yeah. And he said, after a year, I can pay you back. And you said, yeah, what's my return? And he said, no, you'll still be a 20% shareholder. I said, but what if it doesn't work out? He said, I'll give you the 10 grand back anyway. So hang on, there's no risk at all. He said, yeah. You think, something wrong here. He said, that's a scam. Now, that doesn't happen anywhere in any instance in life. But with stop losses, you can do that. Once you get 20% up, as long as you're going to come to the gaps down on really bad news. But if you are investing in a good company, it's not a gap down by 20% or more on open. So generally, once you get that, you know, risk-free investment, you can't lose. So there's only three sides of the con, really. There's losing, breaking even, and winning, you know? If you get rid of the losing, can you break even or gain?
Quick question about stop lossing. And I've not done this for a long time. It's been a couple of years since I used one, which is probably why I've lost so much money. But there were occasions when you'd put a stop loss in where sometimes it would jump over the stop loss, it wouldn't kick in, and the stock would plummet. What? Remind me why that happens, and does it still happen?
You can put a limit loss in as well. So it's literally, the kind of companies we were investing in beforehand literally were crap, you know, micro caps.
Good to know.
Pre-revenue. No, some of them not pre-revenue, but they would have very volatile jumps in the share price. If a company comes up with bad news in micro cap or nano cap, it can gap down. That means basically it'll open up 20% below where it was before, 30% below. If that happens, then your stop losses, you know, it'll sell, it's null and void. So you do a limit loss. But generally with these companies here, they are revenue-generating, profitable companies. They don't do gap downs or gap up. Unless there's like a one-off CFO is a scam artist, which doesn't happen very often. It's like 1%, if that. In fact, less than that. Less than that. Very rarely you get frauds. They do happen. They're very rare. But nevertheless, as long as you're diversified, you can avoid that anyway, that kind of, you know.
Okay, so what you're saying is these top ones are certainly, they're not those kind of stocks then, it's likely to do that.
No, none of these are. All of these companies are revenue-generating, almost profitable companies. They're all good businesses. They wouldn't fit in the list. I've scanned over 200 companies, only 100 make it to the list, right? And this is discounting all the pre-revenues, so any company without pre-revenue doesn't get on here. And so these are companies that are generating revenue, and the ones towards the top end are growing. They're good value, so they're good quality businesses. They're not.
These aren't small caps then, or are they small caps?
No, they are. They're micro caps, so they are sub 100 million market cap. But if they're crap, generally they don't even make the top 100. They don't even make that. So, but again, these are not. If you look at these companies on the list, these are not even the bottom end. So, as you go down, this is my holdings, by the way, but as you go in the microcap league, the lower down the list you get, the more risky they are, you know? So unless you've done research on some of the companies right at the bottom, I would avoid them. Yeah. So I'd stick to the top 20 or something like that, and you'd be fine. You know, top 20, top 50. But yeah, but anyway, but...
Okay. Yeah, sounds interesting. I am going to give it a go because I did say I wanted to jump back in at some point. Again, I don't really want to lose money, but I'm always up for an experiment, and I'm not going to go crazy like I did before and start plowing in money. But
That's what I realized, Steve. Lessons from you and me, and realize, you know, where you go wrong, you have no idea about position sizing. It's all about risk management. It's like, you know, what size your position is, where you go in, all that stuff. Like I said, most private investors lose money, right? Because first of all, they don't know what they're investing into, right? Secondly, they have no idea when to invest in it. And thirdly, they have no portfolio management skills at all. They have no risk management at all. They don't know how much should I put in, what percentage of my portfolio value should I put in. And so this is all about that. My book goes into depth about every single point of this and what you should be allocating to what, when, and how, you know? And so it's all about that. I've spent so much time researching this and my eyes are burning out, the middle of the night, okay, that's interesting. And I'm writing this in the book. So it's all about that. And I'm trying to make it easy for people to realize, wow, I made a lot of money because all focused on reward. And that's okay in a bull market. That's fine. But when you get in a bear market, you're going to give half that up. And do you really want to do that? No. So you should have some risk management. If I'd done this, I realized if I'd done this before the bear market, I'd have been out of stocks. I mean, all in cash, pretty much. And so now I'm literally so disciplined. Every stock I buy, straight away, I put 20% stop loss in. And so any bear market happens, any nuclear war happens, they'll gap down pretty much and sell out the lot. I have now, on my individual stocks, I'm only risking literally 1.7% of my total portfolio value out of all my individual stocks. If anything goes wrong or they start dipping out, that's all I lose. Whereas in a bull market now, the AIM, all shares down 49%. That's the entire index. That's including the winners. Do you imagine some of the losers? They're 80-90%. So it's all about risk management and realizing what's the maximum I can lose if everything goes wrong. And if for me, it's 1.78%. So that's it. It's knowing about risk. You cannot be a good investor unless you manage your risk, because it's all about risking your capital. That's all it's about. And so unless you manage that, you can't manage your reward. Definitely.
I'm going to give it a go. We'll see how it happens, because I think I've said to you, this is my last time giving this a go. To be fair, actually, I could have moved over the fund. This seems like a more riskier fund, but also safe at the same time.
Yeah, as I said, pick the stocks, start small, put a stop loss in. That's what you need to do. And then you sit back. You don't have to watch the share prices. Do you know what? It removes uncertainty as well. I found that as well. I don't look at my stocks so much now, because I think I'm going to lose 20% of 1% on it. Doesn't matter. If it doesn't work, if it works out, if it rises by 20%, I'll just raise the top loss up. That's it. And then all of a sudden, I can't lose. It's so simple. And so, you know, it may trip out and you get back to break even, whatever. But at least I can't lose on those. If I do lose, maximum is 20% of 1% or 20%. But if I'm really confident in the company, I've got 3% in the company, and they're 20% of 3%, which is fine, you know. But, it's all about risk management. Anyway, by the way, hopefully launching the website to new members next week. So if you've not, if you're interested in hearing more, just go to shippickers.com/subscribe. Yeah. And you can read my book. The book is free to read. It's taking a lot of time. Pete is, Pete and Paddy. Steve, why don't you read through it? Be a proofreader for me. It'll make sense to you. Just go on there, log in, read the book. It's only, I did say last week, but I did mention that in the webinar. I said, Steve,
once I finish the Chris Evans book, I'll get on to it. When did you give me that book?
No, I'll give you a Radio 1 book. Wasn't it? You said, I love. You said to me, I've never read a book in my life. I loved that book. I said, oh, cool. Finish it then. You? No, I haven't finished it. And that was 6 months after I gave it to you. I'm about halfway through.
And I never went any further.
I loved it so much.
I genuinely still have that in my drawer on my bedside table.
I loved it so much. I got halfway through within 6 months. So anyway.
I'm not a very good reader.
Okay.
Audiobook, I'll be on it.
I will do an audiobook. There's one issue. There's a section on charts. It's very hard to describe charts in audio, so I'm going to figure out that and say, listen, if you want to learn about charts, just become a member. Marvellous stuff. All right, Stevie, speak to you next week. Bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.